Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules. Rule number one, no touching of the hair or face.
Of course.
And that's it! Now let's do this!
Begin! Yeah!
Who won that war?
Comedy. Right? I think it's a metaphor for all wars. There's no winners or losers.
Hi, I'm Dan Patrick, and this is IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick, an Amazon original, the podcast where I talk to some of Hollywood's top actors, directors, and producers about some of their most iconic scenes that have defined their careers, helped shape the cinematic landscape, and have even become fixtures in pop culture. On today's show, we're joined by actor, comedian Will Ferrell. He got his start on Saturday Night Live, where he met comedy writer Adam McKay. The first film they made together was Anchorman. The movie went through multiple script rewrites, and it took over 3 years to get made. Studios had a hard time seeing how it could be profitable, but after Will's success with Old School, Anchorman was greenlit. And with a budget of $26 million, it was a massive success, earning over $90 million at the box office. The scene we're discussing today is where Ron Burgundy and the Channel 4 news team go into an insane battle royale with several other rival news teams. The battle ends with Steve Carell throwing a trident and a man getting dragged away on horseback in a net. Also, a man being lit on fire. Enjoy. The fight scene in Anchorman.
Yes.
Who comes up with that?
I'm trying to remember. I think that just came up in the course of writing the script. We just thought it'd be funny. We had established the rival newscast gang with Vince Vaughn. And we thought that's a funny runner that they're like almost in a West Side Story way, the guys that you didn't want to kind of go down a certain street because they'd be hanging out.
Well, well, well. Ron Burgundy and the Channel 4 news team.
Hello, West Mantooth. Hello, evening news team.
Hey, nice clothes, gentlemen. I didn't know the Salvation Army was having a sale. Am I right? Look at these guys.
Hey, where did you get those clothes? At the toilet store?
The next logical step would be that we run into them and that it turns into every newscaster from every station you can imagine. You know, I really believe it was Judd Apatow who was like, you guys should make that as crazy as you can. Yeah, and that turned into, a man on fire, Brick Tamlin throwing a trident, a Planet of the Apes-style net, someone being dragged in that. Yeah, we just wanted it to be as vicious as possible and then just break apart like that. But I think we shot that in downtown L.A., it's something like 40 setups, which is, you know, every time you move the camera. And I think that was all done with two units in literally one day. That's the only amount of time we had with the budget.
Any casualties?
I don't believe so.
That's pretty
amazing.
I don't
believe so. No casualties that I know of.
It feels like it would just somebody accidentally would get hurt.
You would think so. Or someone would have been trampled by a horse or something like that.
Won that war?
Comedy. Right? I think it's a metaphor for all wars. There's no winners or losers.
Who was the MVP of that?
I think it's Brick Tamlin is the MVP.
Why?
Well, a couple things. He threw a trident. He found a trident. He also walked around with a grenade that somehow never went off, too. And in Anchorman 2, he has a gun from the future, a space gun, a laser gun.
But I'm guessing when you're sitting around coming up with ideas, so Judd Apatow says, hey, I got this great setup. It's sort of our West Side Story with anchors. And then you just start throwing in things. Anything ruled out?
No, not really. You're just spitballing everything you can think of. Obviously, things are, production-wise, there's limitations. But, you know, I think we pretty much exercised everything. Oh, there's also Koechner, I think, throws a guy like 100 feet, and he lands in a car windshield. So that happened, too. Not to mention Ben Stiller, the leader of the Spanish language-speaking newscasting team. I don't know if we could do that today.
Would the politically correct world allow you to do that scene in Anchorman?
I think so, sure. We might have to recast Ben's part, possibly. Yeah. But I think for the most part, it was all in the realms of today's satire.
How do you do dialogue with that, allowing people to do whatever they want to bring to the character?
In terms of that fight?
Like, who decides that, okay, this is your character and these are your lines, or is it improvised? You can have some fun with this.
I mean, that was such a crush for time. You know, in contrast, we had such a bigger budget for the second movie. We got to shoot that gang fight scene in a week. We took 5 days. But, you know, yeah, you're kind of planning out what the shots are going to be in terms of the stunts and the action. That was like pure chaos because there was, you'd finish one shot and then you run over to the other unit and like shoot this. So it was basically the sound guy's nightmare in terms of all of us overlapping.
I'll tell you who I thought was MVP of the fight scene.
Who's that?
Tim Robbins.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
Because it was just, he was NPR, right?
Yeah, he was National Public Radio. Yeah. Or he was, he would have been PBS.
Oh, PBS. Okay.
Yeah, but same family. Yeah.
Not so fast, you ingrates. Public news team is taking a break from its pledge drive to kick some No commercials, no mercy! Yeah!
And, of course, I think he came up with that whole look, you know, the pipe and the turtleneck. Luke Wilson, he fights on despite losing an arm.
I know.
That's pretty good. Only to lose his second arm at the bear pit. So it was a bad week for Luke Wilson's character.
If you're going to have a fight, then don't forget Channel 2 News with me, lead anchor Frank Pritchard.
You dirtbags have been in third place for 5 years.
Yeah, well, you're about to be in dead place.
Did anything not make it in that scene?
Obviously, there's always stuff that doesn't make it in, but I got to be honest, I think that was a high ratio of most everything that was shot made it in. Because I don't think there was someone who had a cameo that we cut out or anything like that. But I remember it was so funny. We really wanted Ben to do it, and he had schedule, he had this and that. They were like, maybe if you can give him a call. So I called up Stiller, and I said, hey, Ben, look, I know you're busy. And he's like, yeah, I there's just no way I can do it. I just have too much going on. I've got this and that. And I've got to be here. And I'm like, Ben, I totally get it. But I just wanted to ask. I just wanted to double check. And we just appreciate you even thinking about it. Yeah, like I said, I just can't do it. Ben, I get it. Yeah, you got stuff to do. I mean, I really would love to do it. Ben, I understand. Thank you for even considering. Pause. Who else is doing it? Well, we got Luke, we got Tim Rowe, we got... What day are you guys going to do it? Next Wednesday. I swear, we'll get you out in like 4... Okay. I just... There's no way I can do it. Ben, you don't have to do it. All right, I'll do it. He could not sit out. He did not want to sit on the sidelines.
How did you get everybody together?
It was just the power of Adam and Judd and all of us just saying, hey, do you want to have just spend a crazy afternoon? I think the concepts were so bizarre that people were just like, I haven't seen that done before. Yes, sign me up.
Ah, God! Oh, I did not see that coming! Oh. Ah! Now I'll be number one. No, you won't!
Who's your character based on?
The original idea came from watching this longtime Philly newscaster, this guy, Mort Krim, who he's the one who was paired with Jessica Savage in Philadelphia. Okay. And they were the first male-female news team. And that's where I just happened to be watching this weird kind of documentary on a kind of troubled career of Jessica Savage. And they kept cutting back to this guy. And it just made me laugh that he had been retired now 10 years. But when he's being interviewed, now he's a civilian. He's not a newscaster anymore, but he still talked like this. and he had this real affected tone with his voice. And he was saying things like, you have to remember back in the day, I was a real male chauvinist pig. I was not very nice. And that kind of sparked the idea. But I just kind of was a weird kid who liked watching local news. So I watched all these guys.
I thought it might have been Ted Baxter from Mary Tyler Moore. Like, maybe it was like...
Yeah, they're very similar in a way. Yeah.
He was clueless. He was in his own... He was always on, whether he was on TV or not. And, you know, it's probably a combination of all the anchors that we've grown up with.
There's a guy in... I believe his name was Ted Green. Something like that. Anyway, he was a San Diego newscaster, and he was also an L.A. newscaster, and he worked for ABC Channel 7, and he kind of came back and forth, and I was just walking down the street, I don't know, leaving a doctor's appointment somewhere in Beverly Hills, and I see him, and he walks up. He's like, Will Ferrell. I go, yeah, you're Ted Green, and he goes, hey, did you base that character on me? And because he used to have a mustache, and he was in San Diego, and I go, oh no, that's just a bunch of, you know, that's kind of all of you guys rolled into one. And he said, there's an old saying in the news game, yeah, right. And he walked away. And I was literally like, no, I'm not kidding. It wasn't really based on you. But anyway, all right. Everyone in local news now says they have either seen or currently have a Ron Burgundy on their news team.
Great story. Compelling and rich. Well, that's going to do it for all of us here at Channel 4 News. You stay classy, San Diego. I'm Ron Burgundy.
Damn it! Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter? For the last time, anything you put on that prompter, Burgundy will read.
Adam McKay, how many films that he directed when he was doing Anchorman?
First one. Adam was kind of amazing because he was in that sense that he just lets the camera roll and would just shout out lines. And he kind of writes in his head in real time. As you're doing the scripted line, he's thinking of another line and we'll throw that out. That will prompt, a lot of times that prompts me to have a couple more lines and back and forth. So everyone loved working with the style. They kind of, you know, they kind of were like, wait, what did you just say? Oh, God, that's funny. Okay. And so it really created this vitality and rhythm to the shooting that people just weren't used to doing.
I don't know how common that is. I was watching a documentary on the making, you know, John Hughes movies with Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm. And he would be right there in front of the actor who was delivering lines.
Yeah.
And just that he would be feeding them lines and just try it this way. No, try it this way. Try it this way. And is that common or easy to work with somebody who does that?
A lot of people get tripped up because they're afraid of saying it the wrong way or, you know, looking bad, whatever that means. But I just love it because it keeps you on your toes and it's a gift to be able to get to kind of just regurgitate that stuff. And like I said, it makes you think of another brand new thought. So, I think we were just so used to coming out of SNL where you just have to kind of, not that we were improvising during the show, but in terms of creating the work, you just kind of learn to like write quickly and spit it out and try it. And, oh, that worked or it didn't work. All right, next show, just keep going. Not really trying to make everything, you know, so precious. So a lot of people get thrown by it and are really kind of, they want to know if it's good. Am I doing okay? And we would just kind of, you know, reassert with everyone. Well, all those guys in that cast were all improvisers and had a little bit of that in their background. So they were fine with it. But you know, someone like Christina Applegate was like, oh, geez, what's going on here? But she, if you just dive in with that stuff, people then really, really have fun. And it's, you know, it's just about process. It's not about trying to be perfect every time.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
What was your favorite scene in the movie?
You picked a good one, the gang fight. I love the aftermath, too, where we just... I have the line, that one got out of hand real quick. And that was all improvising. Brick, you had a trident, and we were just going around the room. The
Wait, that's not scripted? That
a lot, it's mixed. It's like, it's kind of a mix, but a lot of those lines, we just were like recounting what we had done.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It jumped up a notch.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah, I stabbed a man in the heart.
I saw that. Brick killed a guy. Did you throw a trident?
Yeah, there were horses and a man on fire, and I killed a guy with a trident.
Brick, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. You should find yourself a safe house or a relative close by. Lay low for a while, because you're probably wanted for murder.
Yeah, it's like a boxer after the boxing match. Man, you really got him. You hit him hard there in the fourth round.
One of the really great memories is the scene where we sing Afternoon Delight, because we didn't know where we were going to do that in the movie. We really hadn't worked out how we were going to do it. Someone had recorded, of course, we were still listening to cassette tapes, I think, then, or maybe it was CDs, I don't know. Someone had recorded all of our parts because we really wanted to sing that live in three or four part harmony. And what we didn't know what day we were going to do it. And all of a sudden there was one shooting day where one of the producers was like, hey, Adam maybe wants to you guys to sing Afternoon Delight. And we're like, oh, but we've never worked it out. Don't worry, he'll give you time. And so basically what you see in the movie is us singing it for maybe the fifth time. We rehearse it off camera throughout the day, and then we finally just, they were like, okay, let's do it at the end of the scene. And it was so nuts. But that was just a really cool moment.
Now, you'd done Old School, Elf, and then Anchorman, or in that order. So even with that, was it still tough to get financing for, you know, somebody to buy into this? Like, how much are you risking by making it as crazy as you are?
Well, at that point, the hounds had been released. There was no pulling us back. You know, initially, we had been turned down by everyone in terms of anyone wanting to make Anchorman. The script was kind of sitting dormant at DreamWorks. When it was even a possibility, they were talking about, you know, a certain lower budget range and having to shoot it up in Canada or, you know, out of town. Luckily for us in the movie, Old School was a hit, and my manager was actually over at DreamWorks talking with one of the heads of the studio and Steven Spielberg. And Spielberg was like, you've got to see this movie we have, Old School. And there's this guy, Will Ferrell. He's kind of steals the movie. And Jimmy, my manager, is like, well, you know, that's my client. And you actually have one of his projects. We do? Oh. And then that catapulted them into having to renegotiate and give us about $8 million more and allowing us to shoot in L.A. So because they were all of a sudden a fan of mine, they kind of let us do whatever until they saw the movie. And then they were like, oh, great. How do we market this?
Because that's another thing. Was it tricky to market it?
You know, we were just like, you know, just sell it like heroic newsmen and, you know, just Just make it like the greatest movie ever made. And then, yeah, you're going to have a little bit of, you know, the audience is going to kind of question the tone at first. But once you get the trailer and the materials out there, people will get that it's a comedy. Even though we had stories of people, we had two different stories. I had a good friend of mine, college buddy, who went on a double date. It became like a real litmus test for your comedy taste. He goes on a date with his then-girlfriend, now wife, of 25 years, and double date with another couple. The other couple just leaves halfway through the movie and just whispers, "We don't get this. This is not good. We're taking off." And and he called me immediately. He's like, "Oh, we love the movie, but this other couple just got up and left." And we heard another story of someone on the East Coast who had already seen the movie, and this person said literally a verbal fight broke out at the end of the movie with someone shouting at the screen, "I want my money back," and someone else going, "Shut up, that was genius." And so it was kind of fun that it was creating this a bit of a debate as to whether it was really good or terrible. One of the better reviews that we got from The Guardian in London. Mm-hmm. And we were like, wow, the Brits love it.
Monty
way
Python.
But then the American paper, that was a little bit of an inkling. And then we just started seeing stuff in pop culture. And one of the crazier things was I was sent an image of a troop transport armored vehicle in Baghdad during the first Gulf War with a big stenciled Ron Burgundy's face on the side that said, "Stay classy, Baghdad." And I thought, okay, we're part of the zeitgeist now at that point.
Hey, thank you. And
sure, Dan.
Bye, bud. New episodes of IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick are available exclusively on Amazon Music. Please make sure to follow us in the Amazon Music app to get every episode. IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick was created, hosted, and produced by me, Dan Patrick. It's also produced by Brendan Pike, edited by Nathan Moody, and executive produced by Paul Anderson, Nick Pinella, and Andrew Greenwood for Workhouse Media. IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick is a production of Dan Patrick Productions and IMDb in association with Workhouse Media.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.